Beautiful, thank you. So I don't know if you saw, Becca is here, was here with her two kids. She brought them over to Youth and Families. So this gal, they moved this weekend. She's got two children under three, right? And she sings like that. What? That's just crazy. That's wonderful. Thank you. So I'm gonna tell a story that was told in the center very recently, but I want to go a little bit deeper into it. Was anybody here when Ari Nessel and Nipun Mehta were here a few weeks ago? Yeah. Okay. Does that mean sort of, or you're here? Yeah. So Ari Nessel is a friend of mine, and several people in this center, myself included, are deeply involved in this service organization called Service Space. And so Ari and Nipun, who are leaders in this organization, came down and spoke with us. And Ari told a story about this time when he was at a meditation retreat, and his life was not going very well, and he was kind of grumpy, and he wasn't really thinking he was doing the meditation right, because he still felt grumpy. And then he was at a meal, and he saw somebody else who was attending the retreat who had a shirt that said happy on it. And so Ari said, well, I'm just going to focus on that message. I'm going to take that as a message from something, and I'm just going to focus on the word happy. And so he did, and his experience of the retreat changed. He suddenly felt more grounded and happier. Later, when they were finished with the meditating and they could speak to one another, he went up to the happy shirt guy, and he asked him about him. And the guy said that he attended many, many meditations. Sometimes he served, and sometimes he was a participant. Ari asked him, how does that work for you? And the guy said, well, I don't really have many possessions, and I'm not really attached to hardly anything. But then he said, although I do like my happy shirt quite a bit. The next day after that, they were, I guess, getting ready to leave, and the happy shirt guy approached Ari. And he wasn't wearing his happy shirt. He had it in his hand. And he said, you know, I didn't want to be attached to this shirt either, so I'm going to give it to you because it meant a lot to you. This gentleman gave everything he had, everything that he loved, to Ari. Now, Ari wanted to respond by also giving everything that he had. Ari has considerable financial resources, so he gave this guy a blank check and said, you can write it for whatever you need. For whatever amount, here is a blank check for you. And then they went their separate ways. Now, silly me, when I was eating lunch with them afterwards, I forgot to ask Ari what happened to the blank check. The guy never cashed it. Never cashed it. Not for $10, not for $10,000. He never cashed it. You wonder what that's about? You can have all kinds of projections or speculations what that's about. But I think what's really important is to ask ourselves, if somebody gave us a blank check, what would we do? I had this lively discussion the other day, and several lively discussions, and people have all kinds of ideas about what they're going to do with that blank check. Some are going to spend it on clothes, right? Some are going to use it for a charity. Some are going to use it for something they really need. Some are going to use it for their children. The truth is that we've all already been handed a blank check. It just doesn't look like something that's in your checkbook, and it's not attached to your checking account. It's attached to your God account or your universe account. The blank check that you've been given is your life. Your life energy, your life force, your being, all that you love, all that you care about, all that you don't care about, all of this life is pouring itself through all of us all of the time. And we get to decide how to spend it. So in the words of the poet Mary Oliver, what is it that you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? What is it that you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Or in the words of Larissa Stowe, what you gonna do with all that love? Our brother Howard Thurman has a suggestion. He says, when you're thinking about what you want to do with your life, don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and do that, because the world needs people who have come alive. Ask what makes you come alive and do that, because the world needs people who have come alive. So what makes you come alive? Take a moment to think about that. And do that. My next question, though, is when? When are you going to do that? So often we're waiting for conditions to be right, to realize who we are, to realize our dream, or to realize the wild and precious life that wants to pour through us. This just came to me. I don't have children, but I've heard this. Is anybody ever really ready to have a baby? Becca? Are conditions ever really perfect for giving birth into the world? Probably not, but we do it anyway, don't we? And the same thing is true with our life force. Conditions may not be right, but still we take steps in that direction. We go firmly in the directions of our dreams, firmly in the directions of the destination for our one wild and precious life, firmly in the direction of that which makes us come alive. And there's more. I have a friend, I don't think he's here today, his name is Jeff, and I've known him since I was 19. We met in North Carolina, and he is an avid surfer and a competitive golfer. And we hike together quite a bit, since I've known him for so long, and also our dogs are related, so we hike a lot. And we talk about metaphysics and surfing and golf. And I don't know anything about surfing or golf. I am not really a sports expert. I'm seeing Greg there. I remember when the Mystics, our softball team, used to play, and I'm not quite this lame, but you know, they would get a run, and I'd be like, "Oh yay, Greg, you got a goal! Thank you." Just to tease him, you know. But anyway, Jeff and I talk about surfing and golf because I'm really fascinated. Oh, hi, Jeff. I'm fascinated in things that I don't know much about. Everybody look at Jeff coming late to church. Uh-oh. Hey. And Jeff tells me, I'll paraphrase, but he tells me that when you surf, you have an idea about where you're going, but the reality of surfing is dealing with the conditions of the wave right where you are. With golf, he says that you pick a very, very specific target. It can be a branch on a tree or it can be a blade of grass, and you pick that target and then you swing like it doesn't matter. I also read something about Zen archery recently, and they said that when you practice Zen archery, the Zen archers picture the target right in front of them. It can be yards and yards away, but they picture that the target is right here. And I think that all of these things, because everything is connected, all of these things are metaphorical for the way that we approach our aspirations and our intentions and the present moment. We have an intention, and we hold that intention lightly. But what matters most in terms of allowing us to get there is to be here. We get there by being here and addressing what is going on. Dancing with the wave, as Jeff calls it. So we're dancing with waves of energy all of the time, no matter what is happening. You know, there's so much stuff that happens that feels like it's getting in the way of what we really want to do, but that which is in the way is actually the way. It's a little hard to swallow, but it's true. Early on when we first moved here and I was starting out in ministry at the center, my husband and I lived near the Santa Paula High School, and I've had a tortured relationship with the high school band for many years. It changed recently, but I want to talk about that transition of changing. You know, one of the things that I've noticed in my life, and you can let me know if this is true for you, is that we have this blank check called life, and I seem to spend an awful lot of that resource on complaining and worry and fear and doubt, sometimes shame. Anybody else? You know, it's not wrong that you're doing that. It's just great to notice that you're doing it. Resentment and guilt are another good ones. Regret. All of those things. We spend a lot of that life force on those things, right? One thing that I found helpful is to actually schedule a time for those things, to put it on my to-do list. At 3 p.m., I thought I'd worry for a while. At 4 p.m., I think I'll engage in some regret. And then, ooh, at 7, I get to judge everybody and everything. And when the time comes, you know, you see that that's on your to-do list, and you become very conscious of that activity. And when you are conscious of that internal mental activity, heartful activity, you can make a new choice. Kind of happened with my relationship with the high school. You know, I said that what is in the way, what seems to be in the way, is actually the way. Many, many times when I would be sitting down to write something or I needed to really concentrate, I'd sit down. I've procrastinated for like an hour before, and then I would sit down to do my thing, and then all of a sudden the band would burst into On Wisconsin, you know? Or the drum line would practice, and I used to just resent it so much, and I was spending my life force on resenting and criticizing the band. Because they were in my way. I was trying to work, and the band was playing, and it was about me. It's about me, right? Finally, through a little grace and spiritual practice and coming to the center and, you know, getting the extra help that ministers get, because we're in this position and we just need to practice all the time, and hopefully we practice all the time. Just practicing, I started to see it differently. I started to see that the band was not an annoyance. It was teenagers using their life force for something beautiful and something constructive, where they could have been doing so many other things. And that relationship grew and grew over the years, so that now when the band practices, I'm kind of excited by it. I look forward to it. I know all of their repertoire. The other day, I so enjoyed their practice that I looked it up online. I looked up the band director's name, and I sent him an email, and I said, "What is that song you're practicing? It sounds so familiar, but I can't place it." And I wanted to tell you that I've had this challenging relationship with the band for years. It used to bother me, but now I'm just so excited that you're doing such a great job with these kids. And he wrote back the sweetest note, and he said, "You know, you should come to rehearsal anytime you want. You could come to the concert that we're having." They had it last week, and I went. I don't know. I think I'm gonna like join the booster club or something. I love it. I love the band now. I love the band, you know. And I'll tell you, though, that they have, you know, it's the Santa Paula Cardinals, and they have these big cardinal heads that people wear to the football games. The day I get a cardinal head and wear it to church, that's, you know, it's time to retire at that point. But seriously, I love the band, and the band has not changed. I have changed. I have dealt with the wave of sound in front of me in a new and a different and a more constructive way. I want to spend my life force on that, not in complaining about something that I can't really change. How about y'all? Is there something in your life that you feel that you can't change, but maybe you can relate to it? You can spend your life force, that blank check that you've been given, you can spend that on relating to it in a new and a powerful way that is life-affirming, that leads to greater and greater and greater appreciation of the good that is around us all the time. I know it's possible. If I could do it about the band, you can do it too. The other thing I want to say about this life force and about setting an intention, about your purpose in life, you know, do what makes you come alive. The world needs people who come alive. And yes, we set a purpose, we set an intention, we do what we want to do. And sometimes your purpose is not your purpose. I'll tell you what I mean by that. When I was in the School of Ministry, you know, the purpose was to basically get through it and graduate, right? Get through it and graduate. That was the purpose. But one of our wise teachers said, you know, we give you classes, we give you seminars, we give you lectures, you graduate, and all of that just creates a space for your consciousness to evolve. It gives you something to do so that your consciousness can evolve. And I think that that's true about life in general. So often we're focused on a goal, but again, if we're dealing with the wave and the moment, the steps to the goal are so much more important than the actual goal if it turns out exactly as you pictured it. I have a story that was given to me by our brother Ed Lynch, who is running our video. Ed and Lucky were minding their own business at home, and Lucky saw on Facebook that the Rubicon Theater up the street needed some videographers, and so she recommended Ed, and Ed started doing some video for them as well. And he had the honor and the pleasure of recording this story. The Rubicon recently did a show that was all music. I don't remember the name of it, but it had Harley J in it, who is a Broadway star. He starred in Rent, and he did the tour of Rent. And he was in the show as one of the leads. And one day when he came back from rehearsal, he came back to the Airbnb where he was staying, and he saw that somebody had broken into his home and stolen his car and broken into his home. And that's disturbing in itself, but the most disturbing thing was that the person had stolen a $10,000 Fender guitar. That was a very, very valuable and precious vintage guitar that had been given to Harley by his grandfather, who was a jazz musician. And so it had sentimental value and monetary value as well. Harley called some volunteers at the Rubicon, and they started taking steps. They started looking in thrift stores or pawn shops. They filed police reports, and still no guitar. And one of the saddest things about this is that Harley had to tell a story about the guitar in the show, but he didn't have the guitar. His intention was to come to Ventura and do the show with his grandfather's guitar. That was his purpose. Meanwhile, over here in Santa Barbara, there's a young high school student named Christopher Harley. No, Christopher something. Christopher. What? Huh? Hastings. Thank you. Harley Hastings. Okay. Christopher Hastings. Christopher Hastings has an intuition that he wants to become a great guitar player, so he needs to buy a guitar. So he goes on Craigslist, he and his dad, Christopher's in high school, and his dad, Brian, they go on Craigslist, and they found that somebody's selling a guitar, a Fender guitar. So they go, and they get the guitar, and they bring it home, and Christopher can already play, he just wanted a better guitar, so he's starting to play it, and he and his dad realize, this is a really, really good guitar. And instead of going to the place of, wow, this is a steal. We really got a good deal here. We're going to keep this thing and take advantage of this. Instead of going to that place, you know what they did? They called all of the local police departments, and they asked if anybody had filed a police report. Yeah. And lo and behold, Harley and his grandfather's guitar were reunited. Because of the big-heartedness of this high school student and his father. What a beautiful thing. So Harley's coming to Ventura to do a show, just to be successful in this show. Christopher is buying a guitar to be a successful guitar player. And maybe that purpose is not the real purpose. Maybe that which turns water into ice, which turns matter into spirit, that which is on vacation as God, according to Deepak Chopra. Maybe that orchestrated all of this for that simple, tiny, yet huge and profound act of love that a teenager and his father, instead of taking the guitar and hoarding it for themselves, gave their own blank check and called out to the universe to say, we would rather do the right and noble thing than keep this guitar. Is that not beautiful? So this is available for you. If you're stuck in your purpose, the way to get unstuck in your purpose is to just deal with the present moment and continue to do the next right thing, the next beautiful thing, the next thing that brings you joy, the next thing that is a greater expression of your love. And that's when doors really, really open up for us. I would say one more thing, and that is be willing to be surprised. Be willing to be surprised. Somebody, Jen, recommended me for an article for a LA magazine, and I had to write about my journey here. And one of the first things I said was, I had no intention of ever being a minister at a church. I was a nurse and a singer. I wanted to be a chaplain, but I'm not. Reverend Judy is, but I'm not. I had absolutely no intention of doing this. And within this context, within this center, there are so many things that I had absolutely no intention of doing. One of them is going to Jordan. I'm going to Jordan tomorrow. not Syria, by the way. It's okay. Did anybody see my eyes fly open? Like, okay, I'm not going to Syria. Yeah, it's okay. So funny. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so I'm going to Jordan to attend a conference on trauma and also do some work with Syrian refugees. And I have absolutely no idea, thank you, thank you. I have absolutely no idea why I'm going, other than the fact that refugeeism is becoming a huge thing in the world right now, not only in our borders or the Syrian border or the Turkish border or the Jordanian border, but all over the world there are refugees all over the place. And I want to understand a little bit more about what that means. And I want to understand what it is to lose everything and to have life be so tragic and so terrible, where you're fearing your safety, you're fearing for your kids' safety, you're fearing for all of your worldly goods. What is it that gets somebody to leave everything and go to a new place where they're a complete stranger? What must that be like? And I know that I will only touch the hem of the garment of that knowing, but I want to deepen in that awareness. And I'll tell you, when I was growing up in Briarcliff High School playing the piccolo, playing my axe, as I call it with John, because that's what jazz players call their instrument, their axe. So I say, my piccolo is my axe. Playing my axe of a piccolo. I had no idea that someday I'd be going to Jordan and working with Syrian refugees. Who does that? Who does that? All of the synchronicities that had to happen to make that come into being. All of the doubt about going, thinking that it wasn't working out for quite a while, and people were inviting me to other places. I had a chance to go to Uganda. Who doesn't want to go to Uganda? And yeah, and well, maybe that's next. Who knows? But then having it turn out so that I could go, and you know, without knowing what it is, I feel completely confident that it's going to be beautiful. In whatever way that it's beautiful, even if it's not beautiful, it's going to be beautiful. And one of the reasons that it's beautiful is that I carry the consciousness of this center and all of you with me wherever I go. In the social hall, we have a ripple map where we put pins in this map of the world where our consciousness has rippled. You'll see that you are all rippling into Qatar, which is the first place where I'm stopping. I'm planning acts of kindness for the airport in Qatar, and then you're rippling into Jordan, because I'm going there too. So I just want to thank all of you for just being such a divine presence of love, that we be love and we share love and we serve love, so that I, and at some point perhaps we, will do a project like this where we get to go and really spread it around the world. I ask for your prayers. I will pray for you while I'm gone, but I also ask for your prayers. And my main two prayers are that I am able to be in a place where I'm completely receptive to what the experience has to offer so that I can bring it back and share it with all of us. And then the other prayers for my sweet animals and my family, my husband, who are staying at home. I never like to leave my animals. My husband is okay. He's fine. I'm sorry. Yeah, he's one of the animals. Yeah, no, we've spent a lot of time apart, so we're used to it. But one of my animals looked very sad and bewildered when the suitcase comes out. I call the suitcase Satan. I say, okay, here comes Satan. So, and I don't want this to be about me. You know, all of us have exciting things that are happening in our lives, and it may not seem exciting right now, but it is. It's that life force that wants to spend itself through you. It's that life force that wants to express uniquely as you. And so we deeply accept wherever we are in life. We set our intention, we know our intention, but then we deal with the wave in the present moment, bringing forth and recognizing, mindfully recognizing, where we are tending to spend our life force in things that we do not want, things such as complaining or judgment or resentment or outrage. All of those things, we recognize all of that, and then if we can shift it into constructive uses of our life force that is what we do want, amplifying the good, doing acts of kindness, seeing the grace in everything, recognizing our oneness with God, recognizing the oneness of God with other people, if we can shift that, then we suddenly start to realize that purpose that was our purpose is no longer our purpose. Our purpose is being the fullness of who we are right in this present moment, and that is when life becomes surprising. So I stand with you, willing to be surprised with all of us at that, all the good that we bring forth in this center. Let us do that now. Let us pray.